Welcome back to this special Breast Cancer Update Think Tank. In the booklet accompanying this program are the results of a pre-meeting survey we did with the faculty. One of the more interesting questions was, what was the age of the oldest patient with breast cancer to whom you've given chemotherapy? The answers range from the late 70s to late 80s, and I asked Dr. Ruga whether she considers chemotherapy in healthy patients in their 80s with higher-risk triple-negative tumors.
Absolutely, and I think that's particularly true of the patient, as you mentioned, the ER-PR negative tumor, and HER2 positive, for example, where we know that the recurrence is heavily weighted in the first 2 or 3 years, and as the survival of our population increases, these 81, 82-year-old women who are very well and don't have major medical problems are, in fact, reasonable candidates for limited approaches to chemotherapy. And in fact, I'm still caring for someone Dubu-treated at the age of 80, now 5 years ago, for a ER-PR negative HER2-positive tumor with standard ACT, who's living and now has myelodysplasia. But nonetheless, she had a lot of positive nodes, and I don't think she'd be here now on azacitidine if not. So I think that it is quite reasonable, but within the limits that we all understand to be important, which is understanding morbidities. And I think that's one of the reasons why Adjuvant Online can be very useful in directing physicians who are treating older patients. First of all, obviously the hormone receptor negative patients are the ones we're going to be thinking about chemotherapy for in this older population. And then thinking about morbidity. If a patient has a major morbidity, heart failure, and is going to not be alive in 3 years, well, those are not the patients we should be treating with chemotherapy.
Craig?
We keep making the assumption that the dose density is more toxic than 9344. And it's my impression that if anything, it's less toxic, number one. And number two is to shorten the duration of chemotherapy. And for patients, this is not a minor issue. And I think the older the patient, the more that's an issue. In other words, they don't have as long a life expectancy. And they're sort of making a mental trade-off. Well, how much time am I going to give up to this with a poor quality of life for my benefit? And I think that's the way they should be looking at it. So duration becomes important. It's funny how every time we use the idea that there's a more intensive regimen, we always assume it's going to be more toxic. I think that's one of the surprising results of 9741. And no matter what we look at, it keeps coming up. Not necessarily more toxic, it may be less so.
Cliff?
The issue about dose density is what you say. In the quantifiable, objective ways in which we assess toxicity, you cannot support the argument that it's more toxic. It just isn't there, the data for that. That is to say, 9741 looks equivalent or perhaps less toxic in many ways. And certainly the one toxicity that jumped out at us from the original Citrin paper was the high rate of packed red cell transfusion, and that's something that appears to be abrogated with use of erythropoietin or darbepoetin as prophylaxis on the way down. So I think that to follow up on the other point, though, the reliability of treatment at 14 days with Q2, and now I'm giving the equivalent of an anecdote, it's my subjective opinion that patients stay on schedule more easily when they get the Q2 therapy with growth factor support than when you try to give it Q3. And that's an annoyance at a low level, and it's something that lowers quality of life when people can't plan on their therapy. And I think getting done faster is always worth it, too. So I will say that we've taken the position that unless there's a compelling reason not to give the growth factor, we give everybody Q2-week therapy who gets AC and taxane.